I'm Charis Santilli. I was born with ambition. My parents were entrepreneurs, and I pushed myself to be high school valedictorian, class president, most artistic, and most likely to succeed. The summer I turned 19, we celebrated my dad's 50th birthday with a hot air balloon ride. A crash landing left him with a broken neck, me with a broken heart, and my mom coping through alcohol. My relentless ambition helped me become a successful entrepreneur, yet my own private paralysis and overachiever addiction ruled me. I finally ventured on a quest for my best life. I found the path of my inner peace, how to stay on it, and how to show the way for others. Now it's your turn. Ready to take that load off your shoulders? Join me so you can cherish your life. Hi, everyone. Today, I am here with a new person I just recently met, and we hit it off fabulously from the get-go. I'm so excited to bring Nancy May on. She has such a great purpose in life. She is helping people navigate the caregiving system, especially caring for elderly family members. And I want her to share how she got into this, but she has a corporate background and then found her way into this field because of personal experience, as we all, not all of us, but a lot of us do. We find our way into certain paths because of personal experiences we've had. And as she was dealing with all of these things, navigating this landscape with her own elderly parents, dealing with a lot of costs, figuring out ways to save them hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, figuring out ways to literally save their lives in situations that would have ended their life much sooner than it should have been. And then being able to realize, oh my gosh, she got to the epiphany that she's learned so much. Why not help others with this? So then she's made it her life's work now. So I am thrilled to introduce to you Nancy May. Nancy, thank you so much for coming to share your wisdom and help us all navigate these challenging experiences.
It's a pleasure. One of those days where you trip over your tongue. But that happens. So thank you, Charis. It's a pleasure to be here and to be of support to you and all that you, all the people that you talk to and help.
Well, we're happy to have you here. As you all, most of my listeners know, unless you're new, you know, I've navigated part of this for the last 30 years of my life, which is my entire adult life, as I'm in my late 40s now, in the sense of not necessarily being responsible for caregiving of my father and helping him navigate that, but it's been part of my family's life because of the accident that we were in 30 years ago and him needing caregiving because of him becoming disabled and having needs that caregivers need to provide for him every day to help him in his life. So I've had experiences with caregiving, and I have clients who are of the age, around my age and older, who are in this time where I know that they are navigating some of these challenges and or they're on the cusp of it. They can see it coming, and they're recognizing that there's some decisions that are soon going to need to be made as they're facing the challenges of seeing their parents in some later years in life. So I'm really looking forward to seeing, you know, how you can help some of the people listening today and to navigate some of this. And I know that it doesn't matter if you've got a lot of money or a little money to deal with in this situation. There are some of the same challenges regardless of what the financial situation is. And emotional hurdles, quality hurdles, all kinds of things. So let's go ahead and start off with, give us a little bit of the backstory. What was your experience and why did you start devoting your time to this in the first place?
Sure. You know, I use a lot of humor in everything I've done in the course of life because I think it helps us all. And sort of the tongue-in-cheek story I share is that my folks prepared me for their passing by, you know, since I was 5 years old. But I think having, you know, my mom and my dad were married and shortly, literally within less than about a week that I was born, my mom's mom died and then her dad passed. Mom always said it was from a broken heart. But so seeing that, and then I had a middle sister who at 3 and a half passed away from childhood leukemia, which thankfully is now, I say, you know, curable in today's world. But seeing that and being part of that as a younger family, when you're fairly newly married, I haven't had the conversation recently with my folks. They're not here with me anymore, so it's a little hard to do. I've tried. But I would imagine that when you've got 3 children, one who passes, you're worried that the oldest is going to be concerned about what's going to happen if story. And so they always made sure that I knew that I would be safe if anything happened to them. My sister, my youngest sister, who was 4 years younger than I, or is 4 years younger than I am, would be safe. And life would go on. So over the course of years, Dad always made sure, it was Dad, not so much Mom, but it was Dad who made sure that I knew who the accountant was, the financial advisor, the attorney, where all important records were. I knew the business that he had built and run, not to necessarily take over because he didn't want that, but just that everything was in order and prepared. When time came to actually do that, that was extremely helpful. But there are always things that happen along the way. And my folks had said that they wanted to make sure that they would never be a burden to my sister and myself, which I truly am grateful for at that point. So they did a lot of planning, which was fine. But when they did go into a care facility, their choice, again, not mine, the cost very quickly grew to over $30,000 a month. Now, I just heard the other day that somebody said, or somebody asked me, is that $30,000 per parent or is that $30,000 for both of them? And I said it was for both of them and was slightly over that, but it was growing very fast. And they said, nope, we've dealt with $30,000 per parent. So these numbers are not unheard of. You will be told if parents are going into a care facility that you're thinking about $3,500 a month. That's the first day. But my folks had done well, and yet they were well going to outlive those costs and what was going to happen. So with that, I started to say, what do we do next? And my dad did not have cognitive issues. My mom did. And we planned. I said, you put me in charge. What do you want to do? We can sit here and hope that things work out well, or we can basically get the heck out of Dodge, which is what we did. But running my own business, which is, you know, was or is still to some extent working with public companies and boards of directors and those who want to get on paid boards, is that I use my business skills to say, what are we going to do and how are we going to handle it? And realize that being a POA or durable power of attorney or having any type of ability to manage the care or oversee the care. It's not really managing the care, but it's really overseeing and making sure things go well for those that you love. It is like running a small, highly complex enterprise. And that's how I started to manage and realize that this is the way I'm going to keep my head, my heart, and things afloat and make sure that my folks were safe. And I've got before and after pictures. My mom would have been dead probably within 3 months if we had left them there easily. And I look at people and I showed them the picture before and after, and they're like, this is the before picture. I said, yeah. And if I were to show them pictures on their deathbed, they would have said they look better than they did at this care facility. So that's just the beginning of the story. And I did it from 1200 miles away.
Wow. And I know you and I've talked previous to this about, like, obviously we both understand and know that there's a huge range in quality. So there are some wonderful, amazing facilities out there and wonderful caregivers and all the things. And like you just described with your parents, there are some horrible experiences and situations where there's not enough staffing and or training and or whatever, whether it's in-home, as my dad's always experienced in-home caregiving, where someone comes in the morning and comes in the evening, or in your parents' situation where they were living inside of a facility where, you know, where they're, so anyway, I just wanted to say for the audience, if you're having a great experience, if you've heard about a great one, yes, like Nancy knows, we know there are some great things out there. It's not just, this isn't just a bash on facilities or on caregivers in general. It's just understanding that there is, like everything in life, there's a range. You don't always get what you pay for. The money doesn't always matter. And
you have to be flexible.
Yeah.
You really have to be flexible and fluid in how things, because the facility that my folks went into was considered one of the best in the area. It was a nice looking facility. I've seen others that are absolutely beautiful. But as they say, you know, the cover of the book doesn't tell the story.
So what was, you know, in a nutshell, you know, without having to go down a horrible, you know, or scare everyone with the possibilities, but, you know, what do you like to share with people to understand the consequences of poor quality care? Like what does that look like? Is that a lack of attention? Is that a lack, what's lacking in that?
Well,
a lack of staffing?
Let's sort of just look at what poor quality care is. And that's different to everybody, quite frankly, because poor quality care could be that there isn't somebody walking in with a stethoscope to make sure mom and dad are okay every day. But things change. I mean, people change in very subtle ways or very quick ways in care facilities and even at home. And being able to make those adjustments and know what to do. I think the biggest, if you're dealing with care facilities, let's take that aside first. The biggest thing that people don't understand is how the system works. In fact, I was on a call, an insider sort of call the other day, and they were talking about, and I knew this, but I didn't know to the full extent what some of the numbers were, how owners of these facilities are hiding profits and benefiting significantly just on pulling money out of, you know, CMS type of situation. So the Center for Medicare and Medicaid is paying in some cases for these facilities, and the profits are huge. But we're probably talking, you and I are probably more talking about private pay and private care facilities. And they are for-profit, they're typically for-profit institutions. We do not understand as consumers how they run. We think they are medical facilities. They are not medical facilities. Unless they are licensed as a pure medical facility, which is a nursing home, a rehab, or some sort of hospital-related facility, it is not a medical care facility. So assisted living, independent living, even memory care facilities are not medical facilities. We assume they are. And we don't understand, or I'd say even the continued care communities, because those are beautiful facilities that you're being promised, or mom and dad will be promised. You go from independent living life on the golf course to the nursing wing if you need it. You have to make sure that that nursing wing is truly licensed separately as a nursing facility, if that's the case. And even if it is licensed, doesn't guarantee you're getting quality care. So you really need to be on top of this. Depends upon what you want for your loved one. And what can be managed. But understanding the contracts, what goes into them, what's told, what's not told, where to dig, where you can negotiate, and even to the point where I had somebody who would take their mom and they would stay for a week, and if mom didn't like it, they were on to the next one. So it's, I call it the try before you buy. It's kind of like the Cinderella slipper. If it doesn't fit, go to the next one. That's all possible. And they will scare you with such marketing tactics like there isn't enough room at the inn. Well, that is total BS. There's plenty of room. These things are popping up like mushrooms on a wet day. So there's always another one that you can go to, a new one, a better one, whatever looks good from the outside. The key is you don't necessarily know what's happening sort of under the covers or under the hood. And that's where things change really quickly.
Okay. So, what do you then help people do? Like, so how, like, how do you help people now to navigate this? What does that look like if someone, like, what would you be doing with
them? Sure. You know, it runs the gamut really from, I'll say, coaching or advising a group of family members to decide how they're handling and running this so that, that in fact, they don't end up hating each other as siblings. I was talking with a family the other day, and there were two brothers and a sister. Sister, the two brothers felt very bad that the sister was doing a lot of the care. Well, you know, the guys at GOTA tended to throw that on us. I don't mean in a bad way, but we as women will tend to jump in a different, and she was closer to their parents, but they didn't know how to give her a little bit more space when needed. And one was taking charge of certain things, which was fine. I'm a firm believer, like in any business, you run a ship or you run a process better when there's one leader, not two or three, because there's confusion going on. I mean, if you're talking business, how many times do you see when a company says they've got co-CEOs that really works well? Not so good, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Somebody has to be there to make the tough decisions at some point. You get consensus or you build the information and then you make the decision. But in this particular case, the leader was being very hard on the other one. And I got a note back from the second brother who said, John apologized for being such a jerk. Well, that's good. That's a start in the right direction. But it's not a dictatorship when you are in charge of things like that. And sometimes you have to know how to balance what information to share, how much to share, when to share, that kind of stuff. So it's not that you're hiding things. It's just like anything. If you're in charge of critical care and life situations, sometimes it's just easier to make those decisions yourself as opposed to having the meeting to make the decision, kind of thing. So that's one way to do it. The other is if you're going through the early stage process of even getting into this, it's how do you get your parents on board? Mm-hmm. Especially if they don't have all their material and all their legal affairs in order. I was talking to somebody the other day who said, you know, I could have used you. My parents died intestate without wills. And she started to cry. And this happened like 4 years before, you know, 4 years ago. She said, it would have made our life so much easier. So even if it's you, the adult, you know, the CEO or the family member that needs to figure out what do I need to do and how do I want to do this so that my family will be fine and safe and be organized enough, have the information they need to make sure things are fine, then we can coach and advise on that. And then the other is really just going over those care facility contracts. How do you do that? Taking them to an attorney. An attorney knows how to look through the contract, but the attorney doesn't know what goes on behind the scenes at some of these care facilities. What's negotiable, what's not negotiable, what's being shared, what's not being shared, how to look at your own assets or your parents' assets and really make that decision from a balance sheet perspective of what's there or not. So those are some things that we do.
And something that you just said, I know sparked something that from our conversation before too, which is I got a lot of, you know, entrepreneurs or entrepreneur-minded people, business owners, and the concept of taking this on and thinking, you know, running some of it like a business. I mean, separately from how you're talking to your parents and things. I'm not talking about
emotionally.
That.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, you need to have the emotional wherewithal and be very kind and compassionate for yourself and for them and everybody involved. But as far as like really look at all the pieces at mm-hmm. hand. And just like you said, what's on paper is one thing. Well, what's not written down? What are the negotiables? All the things that if you were treating this like a business and a business mm-hmm. deal that you would be poking around and looking into. So I think that
we
a lot
forget
of people
to do that when it's yeah. family. We really do. And if you're doing this at home, which is, we did both, you know, mom and dad were in the care facility and we took them out, bought an asset, a house, moved them in and managed a team of 6 independent aides, fired the agency. I ran those aides like they were my own agency, but just like anything, they were employees and some employees work well and some don't. So how quickly do you cut? It's very difficult at times. I think it's more emotionally difficult to let some of those people go because it's our parents. It's not our business. It's a little different. And we hang on to them a little too long. And we don't know necessarily how to hire those individuals in some cases. But I'm a firm believer, if you know what your parents need, and you have one or two who are exceptional at the details of certain things, that, you know, I would say pseudo medical care. I mean, you're not having a nurse necessarily in there all the time, but somebody who's been around the block with this, you hire for attitude. You can train on the rest when it comes to caregiving. Mm-hmm. You can't train for attitude.
And I've seen a lot of changes with my dad over the years, different caregivers, different personalities, all sorts of different things, mm-hmm. you know, and then like you were saying, in regards to what the needs are, he's completely, you know, has complete mental capacity and is able to navigate this and manage it himself. And mm-hmm. so, that's, you know, I'm really happy that he's able to make those choices for himself. Yet it can be and has been a challenge over the years, the turnover, the things that change, yeah. people that move away, move on, change their mind, they decide to do something else. You're depending on one or two key people, and then they have sick kids or this and that, and you know, how do you navigate all of that? It is a lot. And if your parents are relying on them like he does, I mean, he literally needs mm-hmm. their assistance to get out of bed.
Yep.
Take care of a lot of morning routine, and then to get into bed at night and to take care of a nightly routine. It's a big deal. And if they don't show up, or something goes on with their family, or they're late one day, or there's an accident, or like all the things that have happened that I have heard mm-hmm. about.
We had those too.
Yeah. Then, I mean, he literally will be stuck in bed until something changes, you know, it's, or he has to call and track down somebody else. And it's big deal. And it is,
and an agency doesn't, you know, an in-home care agency doesn't necessarily do any better than you would do. Mm. So, it makes it a little easier in that there is somebody that you can, I'll say, bitch and complain to sometimes. Right. But I ran our aid team like a team. We mm-hmm. had one leader. I fired the main leader at one point because we had some major issues that came about. But I knew who the next person in line would be just by watching and seeing and having that communication of what was happening. It was a natural, the next person up was very natural. She wasn't confident that she could do it. And I said, you know what? I'll be there for you. And we were in constant communication, just like anything. Like we were talking about small business. You don't rely on one employee. Mm-hmm. You don't rely on one customer. You can't. And I see too many families when it comes to AIDS, especially if mom and dad want to stay at home. And most of us, I mean, I wouldn't want to go to a care facility knowing what I know these days. I wouldn't want to do it. Care is sort of in quotes, right? It's just what it is. You really have to make sure that you have more than one or two. And as soon as you've got a team, you're always looking for the next one constantly. But that's true of a good business. You're looking at that succession. You're looking at that turnover. When the situation changes, you have to change up the team that's there. And it's not everybody. It's just one or two sometimes. And their life changes. So, And the care of the parent that you've got, or the parents that you've got, their situation changes. So the ability of the individuals that are on that team may not be up to what you need. Just like looking at the business, you've got technology that's changing. You've got the environment that's changing, competitors that are changing. You change things up, and not to sort of make things sanitized. But it's really not that much different. It's emotionally different. It's mm-hmm. highly emotionally different.
And that's why I think this is an area, like, for everyone to know that there's even somebody out there like you to help navigate this is...
Talk it down from the tree.
Yeah, it's because, You don't know what you don't know. And if you don't have experience dealing with this before, how are you going to know all these things? How are you going to know what's negotiable and what's not? How are you going to know what are good, you know, what are the signs that something is, that a place is not good for your parent if they're not able to really be aware and or communicate that back to you? How, you know, so to know that there's somebody out there like you that can be a guide, a support in that process, regardless of what stage it's at, is I was just excited to know that you were there and really was excited to share, because I think that there's a lot of people listening who just, even if they're not at that stage yet, just can like, oh, a sigh of relief when they get there, there's somebody like you that they can reach out to and get some support so that they're not just going in blind.
If nothing else, a reassurance sometimes, just to say, do I think something's right? And beyond the care of the healthcare industry, you have to know that you can fire a doctor, mom and dad's doctor or medical professional team, whoever they are, individuals, our folks end up liking them. Well, just because you like somebody doesn't necessarily mean that they're good at what they do. Mm-hmm. And there are warning signs on that front as well. You know, one is probably the easiest one to notice is if a parent goes to, let's say, a regular medical exam and they're waiting 2 hours, something's wrong. Mm-hmm. That's a bad practice. In fact, I went to a doctor down where we are now for the first time. It was referred to me for an allergy thing. And I walked right in the door. I saw everybody sitting there and I thought, I actually asked, how long is my wait? They said 20 minutes. An hour and a half later, I was ushered in. I was fuming. You could see the smoke coming out of my ears. I was beyond fumes. I already asked the question. I asked it before I got there. I filled out all the information. And then when I got into the exam room, I had to wait another 30, 40 minutes. And the doctor, who was lovely and nice, and he was fine, said, are you okay? I know, how are things today? And he said, they're not good and they're not good for you. And he said, whoa, taken back. And he said, I almost walked out of here. I said, if this is how you run your business, I have a serious question about you and your medical practice. And he's like, really? And I said, yes. I never went back. And I told the referring doctor, I said, don't ever refer anybody to this doctor, because if he can't run his business, he can't do well for his patients. End of story. But that's a warning sign. And many doctors will also typically line up elderly people more than they need, knowing that people will get frustrated and they'll leave. Well, if they had them organized in such a way that they were able to attend to them properly, the patients wouldn't leave. There wouldn't be an issue. So warning sign number one. The other is also looking at your financial advisors. Fired financial advisors, looked at FINRA complaints. We had some issues. Understand who your financial advisors are working with, how they're working. And just because they've been working with mom and dad for a long time doesn't necessarily mean they have their best interest at heart. As you're dealing with business professionals, there's something called benefit to broker versus benefit to client. You want those that are focused on the needs and the care and the importance of making sure that your parents are financially whole so that you don't have to step in. 63% of us will pay for some portion of medical and you know, elder care support to our parents. Our parents don't want us to do that. So some early warning signs. And that includes accountants and lawyers, everybody. Trust and verify.
Speaking of financial advisors, I want to share with everyone that I have met and have been getting to know some amazing financial advisors.
There's some fabulous ones. They really are.
So if anybody, you know, wants some introductions, reach out. I have a feeling Nancy and I can each refer you to some amazing people. So that I know truly have your and your family's best interests at heart and
that's
really
key.
Care. Yeah. Yeah.
That's real key. It took us 3 years to unravel the mess, and we couldn't unravel all of it that my dad's financial advisor had done with their affairs, their financial affairs. And I knew it was there, but I legally couldn't do anything until I was the durable power of attorney in charge of their financial. I had warned my dad, I told what was going on, but he liked the guy And the fellow had even said, "Nance, your dad doesn't know what the hell's going on. He's just nothing but an old fart." Now, who tells a client's kids that, right?
No, not appropriate. Not appropriate at all.
Not appropriate. No. And I could go on more stories on that, but it took us 3 years and we were able to get things back. But it was, you know, I was on the phone with my financial advisor who I hired to handle this sometimes 3 or 4 times a day in the beginning, just to try and figure things out.
No, yeah, we do not want anybody to be in that situation.
Never.
So,
and so, we're not the only ones that have done that. So just head.
No, and I've, yeah, and the more experience you have, the more you see that any profession, any certification, it doesn't guarantee that you're getting what I think we maybe thought of when we were kids. We, you know, at least I know my generation and what I grew up with. I absolutely assumed that if someone went to school for something or got a certification, that then, you know, puts them on this pedestal. And as I've gotten out into the world and grown older, I've realized that is not the case. And so you've got to do massive due diligence and then be willing to change your mind and leave if something's not working, because, absolutely, and give yourself a break too. Oh, by the way, because if you had more information, you would have made a better choice. So, you know, you do your best and
don't beat yourself up over it.
No, you can choose again. And switch things up and get to some place where you feel better and you feel more peace of mind and or your parents do. And
absolutely. Keep them informed. You know, keep them informed if they are sound, you know, they have sound mind and want to be involved. Keep them involved in some way, shape, or form so that they know what's going on and build some trust and reinsurance. Trust is probably not the wrong word, but sense of peace for them too, because they're putting a lot of trust. They're putting their lives in your hands and you want to do well and you don't want that last day to be one filled with regret. You really don't.
It's a very personal thing. Having a caregiver in their space and dealing with them literally, I mean, depending on what their needs are, but I mean, it's a very personal experience and if you can make sure that they are truly comfortable and happy with who's taking care of whatever aspect of their life and coming into their home or their room or whatever, it's a big deal.
And sometimes they won't tell you. Your parents won't tell you. We had should share a little side story. My sister and I would probably, sometimes we play good cop, bad cop. She is out in Oklahoma. I was up in Connecticut and came down to my folks. And one day my sister said to my dad, like, "How are things going? You know, how is so-and-so doing?" And he looked at her and sort of pursed his lips and didn't really even look at her. He just sort of did that and said, we've done better. And I said, okay, that's all I needed to hear. Thank you. For my dad to ever criticize anybody. Mm. Whoa. That was the signal, time to make a change. And, you know, it's those little things and just knowing how to sometimes get the information out. Because your folks will know that you're doing the best that you can, or you're trying to do the best you can. And they don't want to make things more good people. I mean, most parents are good, but, you know, sometimes we have not so great relationships with our folks at times too. So, and they with us, but being able to have them trust you enough just to say, you know, you're doing a good job, but can we try it a little bit differently?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good point. I'm glad you brought that up. So ways you can support people. I know you do one-on-one consulting work, mm-hmm. Which is, I think, super powerful for this sort of situation. Mm-hmm. I know you have a book that you've written that you can talk about a little bit. You have a podcast. So the book is called How to Survive 911 Medical Emergencies, Step-by-Step Before, During, and After. Which is awesome.
This is a very simple, easy to read book. It goes from everything from what happens, what you should do before you even have to call 911. This is not your fourth grade dial 911 type of book, but just the simplest, even understanding how they can find you or how they can't find you. There's a doctor that I just interviewed on my podcast, which is Elder Care Success. And the biggest challenge that a lot of paramedics and first responders have is when an older person lives by themselves or with their spouse and something happens and they can't get in the door after somebody's called 911 for them. You've called from, or they've called. So in many states, or in most states, those first responders cannot legally enter the door, or break down the door, or break in a window, or get in any possible way. They have to wait for a police officer to come. And they usually don't come with a police officer. So a life and death situation, minutes can count. But he's got a lock device that can work through an app. So if you're in Connecticut or California and your folks are in Tennessee, you can unlock that door for them as soon as they get there virtually, and you can lock it when they leave. So security is a key, and understanding how to do that. Those are the little, tiny little things that make such a difference in being able to do well and more easily. You know, technology is a great thing. And then there's some really simple, easy things that are low tech that can keep them safe and your own head and heart in place too.
Great. Yeah, that sounds extremely supportive. Yeah.
And so, the 911 system does go down. There's even a chapter in the book that says, what do you do? You know, how do you call 911 when the 911 system is down, the national system or the regional system? They do go down. So there are tips on how to do that as well.
Oh, okay. And then I'm glad you brought up your podcast called Elder Care Success. So tell us a little bit more about that. Is that a, you know, how often and
sure.
guest or solos or what is that?
It's a combination of the above. It's 117, I think, goes out next week. So it's a weekly show. We do twice a week or twice a month. We do, I do an interview, and then twice a month I do a solo cast. So the last one I did was what happens when the doctor takes somebody off a prescription that you don't know about and it becomes a life-threatening situation.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's those are short episodes. They're usually around 15 minutes or so. And one coming up next week is on a town called Dementia-Friendly Saline and how the movie theaters have actually gotten engaged with helping family members in this particular community with the support of one person who was taking care of his wife for 30 years with early onset dementia to make sure she and the town and the community really accepted people with dementia or cognitive issues with grace and understanding that they're people too. And guess what? It's also good for business.
Mm. Okay. And there's a fun story. So in your podcast artwork, the photo is of you and your dad, Stu, right? Just before.
That's correct.
So tell us about that. And side note, a lot of people may not know this. So the in my podcast art, which is, if you're watching this, is in the corner, the hat I'm wearing was my mom's. So little side note there. She was amazing. One of those people that could put on any hat and you're just like, oh my gosh, you look fabulous.
That's
always
a good picture
fabulous.
Of you actually too.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. She always looked fabulous, but boy, you know, she could really wear hats. And so that's fun that is one of her hats that I'm wearing in my podcast artwork. And she passed away 10 years ago now. So, so tell us a little bit about this picture. So if people see your podcast cover art and they see you with your dad, Stu, tell us what was this moment?
So when I came down from Connecticut, in fact, I used to have nicknames for all the people that were working with us, whether they be good or bad. And I would refer to myself, especially with the care facility, as the Wicked Witch from the North, because I would fly down from the North from Connecticut down to Florida. And then I had Nurse Ratchet and Tweedledum and Dumb Tweedle. And so the list went on. You know, doing those things sometimes keeps you in check, both emotionally and physically.
Oh,
in
yeah.
Many
hey,
ways,
I,
right?
I did a quick side note. I did an episode, I don't know if it was a month or two ago, called Finding Humor in the Hard Stuff, Even in Hospice. Oh my gosh, the stories I shared in there and some of the things that Dad and I found where we were able to laugh about, some of the stuff that happened. I mean, but boy, it helps. Yeah. I mean, it just helps, especially in these, what could be and is such a serious topic and situation. So anyway, okay, so back to the-
quickly on the subject of hospice. So my dad was big Christmas person. And as we brought him home from the hospital and we knew we couldn't make any more decisions, this was it. And so he had 10 days at home and he loved Christmas. So it was September, he died on September 11th. So it was 1st of September and I was like, Christmas, you know, we need to decorate his room like Christmas, mom and dad. So we just decorated that room with Christmas. But September, like thankfully there's Christmas stuff. This was at Michael's craft store. There was Christmas stuff everywhere. Thank you, Michael's craft store, for having Christmas out early by July. So we had lights, we had decorations. We did it up for him and we did it for us. But anyway, the photo, to go back to the podcast, the photo is of me and my dad sitting there, you know, standing there, thumbs up. And I would come down and always trying to find something to do a little different for them. They did that with us as kids. So mom didn't want to go out. Mom had dementia. And she said, you guys go out and do whatever. So I was on Groupon, always looking for something different. And I found you could go on a helicopter ride around tours. So I thought, why not? Let's give it a try. So he was 98 and I took my lead aide, who was scared to death of heights, with me. And she's like, well, if Nancy can do it, I guess I can do it. But heights never bothered me. And we got Dad into a little tiny helicopter, the other two of us, my aide and myself, Millie and I, were in the back seat. And we have pictures of you know, I'm smiling. She's like this.
Terrified.
And Dad's having a ball in the front, but that was before we took off. And there's this little string on the front of the helicopter window. And as we're going up, I asked the pilot, like, what's that little string? And he says, oh, that's to make sure that I'm flying in the right direction should something go wrong and we get disoriented. And she's, Millie's back, like, string is going to make sure that we're landing the right. And my dad's like, oh yeah, I've seen that before. World War II, it's fine. But you know, another thing, just a quick note that we did, mom and dad liked to go on cruises a lot, but it came a time where we just couldn't cruise. You know, I was going to take them out on a cruise and mom was having some issues and I just finally had to cancel the cruise. So again, thank you Groupon. I found a small charter company that was in Tampa Bay. And we chartered a 4-hour cruise in Tampa Bay Harbor with music and took all the aides and their family. We made it a big party for the day. And it was just enough for mom and dad. They were exhausted by the end of the day, but I kind of felt like Gilligan's Island, like, you know, and it was a 4-hour cruise or 3-hour cruise in Tampa Bay Harbor. Thankfully, we did not hit a storm and we did not end up on a deserted island. We ended up back at shore.
That's wonderful.
So we created our own fun and cruise, and there were a lot of other stories and ideas and things that were very simple to do and maybe not so extravagant, but we had a lot of fun.
I love that. I love it all. We're going to make sure that we have links to these things in the show notes, to your book, to your podcast, to your website. Any final parting words for our listeners today, or anything you want to share with them?
No, I'm thinking about starting a group. So we'll see, you know, people want to share in a group. We can do that too, but that's not ready yet. I find that most families want to share privately, and those that want to share publicly are doing it in ways that I think, why would you share that information to people you don't know? I don't get it. But
well, some people do. Yeah. Some people, it does. Yeah. A group setting is a nice support to just know that there's other people going through this and to be able to share about the experiences and then have you can, you know,
in a trusted way that's private.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yep. Yeah. Absolutely. And yeah, I have some group coaching situations too, where, some people really can thrive in that kind of environment, right. And then can learn as the other person is going through their stuff and they learn things. And I've been in group situations before myself that were super supportive. And then I've been in one-on-ones that are super supportive. So it just depends, stage, time, preference. Absolutely. So great to know. Okay. Well, everyone, I hope that this has been valuable for you at least to have the idea and the knowledge now that there is someone like Nancy out there who can support you. Get her book to learn how you can help be more prepared for emergency situations. And
you will call 911 more than you realize, just to, not to be rude and interrupt, but
no.
It's the one number that we're never prepared to call, and it is highly highly charged with emotion and fear and anxiety, and it doesn't have to be.
Yeah, and I have a personal experience calling that about 11-ish years ago. Yeah, it is a lot when you've got an aging parent.
Yeah,
yeah,
or somebody else calls it for you.
Very charged situation. So please check out her book and her podcast if you're about to face or you're in the situation of taking care of elderly family members and watching out for these things, learning more. And then, of course, if Nancy can be of support to you, do not hesitate to reach out, because she has a wealth of knowledge and can clearly help guide you. And I mean, sometimes it's having someone to hold your hand and reassure that you're dotting the I's and crossing the T's, helping you fill out forms. I mean, all kinds of things that you don't realize how you can get stopped or get overwhelmed with when you're running the rest of your life. And then you add on the emotional component of all of this, and it can be very daunting. So do not hesitate to reach out to get support here, please, everyone. And with that, I'll leave the links in the show notes. Reach out to Nancy, connect, listen, read, and we'll see you next time.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. I hope you're enjoying my Cherish Your Life podcast. If this is supporting you in any way, please review, subscribe, and share it with friends and family. You can follow me on social media at Cherish Your Life, and my website is cherishyourlife.com. Yep, my name's unique. Here's an easy tip for you to pronounce and spell it. It's like the city Paris, but with a CH. Special thanks to my dear friend Paul Suyelgis, who enhanced and mixed the musical track. Little did we know back in college in the 90s, while my then boyfriend, now husband, and I listened to Paul riff on his guitar, that he'd be helping me decades later give a creative touch to something called a podcast.